Welcome to episode 35 of Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and each week I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. We talk about what their motivation was to act on climate change, what they do, and what their vision of the future is. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. This week's guest is Jim Spano, managing partner at Spano Partners and founder and director of origination for Radiant REIT. Radiant REIT is the first investment trust to bring mortgage REITs to the solar energy market. By financing solar like real estate, Radiant REIT is able to offer long-term fixed-rate debt that matches the operational life of an asset and at a lower cost of capital, increasing developers' project cash flows and allowing them to maintain ownership in their projects. Jim is a nationally recognized expert in solar development and finance. He has been instrumental in the development of over 300 megawatts of solar generation, primarily in the Northeast United States. He is the founder and president of the New Jersey Solar Grid Supply Association, vice president of the Mid-Atlantic Solar and Storage Industry Association, on the board of the International Battery and Energy Storage Association, and most important, is a dedicated philanthropist. Take it away, James Henry Bedell. Welcome to Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat. I'm here in New York City with Jim Spano. He's the managing partner of Spano Partners and founder and director of origination for Radiant REIT. So can you tell me a little bit about your motivating moment when you decided I'm going to do something to help mitigate climate change?
Actually, my initial introduction into the industry was based on need as opposed to desire. The desire grew from that need. I started my first solar project, my first renewable project, was actually just a component of a much larger real estate deal that I was doing, where I was building a 500,000 square foot mall and marketing it as the first all-green mall in the U.S., and obviously taking advantage of the early days of climate change recognition. That's going back to 2004 when we started that project. So my initial intent was really the marketing of a real estate project. Ultimately, I've become a true believer in climate change. I've been a strong supporter and advocate of decarbonization, and I look forward to our interview.
Is there a specific moment when you said, wow, this climate change thing is something I'm going to really focus on now?
Interestingly, there was a report that came out that indicated that a good portion of the shorelines in New Jersey would be underwater within 30 years. That created my first, and then of course Storm Sandy kind of opened your eyes to the realities that this isn't just something that we're talking about. It's not something so far in the future that it's unrealistic, but it's real and it's happening. And that's the point where I realized we need to do something about it. I'm a citizen of this earth and we have a responsibility to care for it.
When you meet people that don't believe in climate change, how do you explain to them that it's something real that they should take seriously?
Like anything else, some people take a position that's not necessarily always logical or intellectually determined, but more picked up from the one-liners that they hear from the press or from other people. I think anybody with a reasonable mind is going to recognize that the climate has had significant change. People can argue whether it's human-oriented or, you know, the human activity is a catalyst for climate change, but there's no questioning that climate change is occurring. Weather events that were heretofore recognized as 100-year events or 500-year events are happening every other year now. So it's pretty hard to be a true denier any longer.
So tell me about what you do here at Radiant REIT.
Radiant REIT is a solar mortgage REIT, the first in the United States. It's designed to provide developers with a financing mechanism that eliminates the capital constraints that most developers, is the biggest inhibitor in a developer's growth of their business. So solving that financing need for the industry was something that motivated me a few years back. After developing quite a few solar projects myself and recognizing the difficulty we had in obtaining financing and realizing that it's primarily an equity-based business today, until you accumulate a large enough portfolio to securitize it and, you know, access bond markets and so forth. our thinking when we put Radiant REIT together was to solve the financing obstacle that was preventing a lot of developers from significantly increasing their activities. So by providing the capital stack that's needed for them to significantly grow their businesses, it's basically enabling us to have a significant impact on climate change. The more developers that we can have participating in the industry and increasing their activities, overall, the more decarbonization that we're going to generate. You know, there's a lot of talk about 12 years from now, the whole world's going to come to an end. You know, I'm not necessarily buying into that story, but let's face it, there is a significant problem that needs to be addressed. And by providing a financing mechanism that allows for further penetration of solar, we will have a significant impact on climate change.
Do you finance the entire stack?
We do. We have a combination of a tax equity fund that we're currently raising. We're starting in 2020, and for the 2019 loans that we're issuing, we're matching up our tax equity investors with our developers and project owners. Starting in 2020, we're going to be having annual tax equity funds that we'll be raising that will enable each fund to go for its five-year period, be cash back out, taken out of the deal, let the developers own 100% of the deal, and those tax equity investors can reinvest in subsequent years. And so you're basically rolling every 5 years with a new tax equity fund. We're across the board. We're financing 100-plus megawatt utility-scale projects out west. We're financing C&I projects all throughout the Northeast. We're financing community solar projects across the country. Our goal is to further the penetration of solar, and we're basically agnostic as to what type of solar we're developing.
That includes residential?
Large residential developers that have, bearing in mind our minimum loan is a $10 million loan commitment over a 12-month period.
Okay, that changes the game.
Yeah, it takes out most of the residential guys.
Yes, it does.
Other than the aggregators of residential.
What do you specifically do here?
My responsibility at Radiant REIT is to originate the loans. We have a team of experts in the REIT business, guys that come from some of the largest REITs, executive positions in some of the largest REITs in the country, positions like president, chief operating officer, chief financial officer, and so forth. So we put a team together of REIT experts. My responsibility within the organization is to originate the loans, basically reaching out to the relationships I've developed over the last dozen years and providing an alternative financing vehicle that will allow all my friends and relationships to begin to own projects. See, one of the things that has prevented developers from really significantly increasing their business is the capital constraint. In order to develop a project, you have to deploy a significant amount of capital to get to NTP, and most developers will sell their projects at NTP, and then they have to wait until they receive those funds in order to develop their next project. By providing the entire capital stack to those developers, we're enabling them to immediately develop multiple projects at the same time without the capital constraints, and providing them the tax equity contributions that are needed, which is another large constraint for smaller developers.
So in the end, they get to own the project.
They get to own the projects outright. We even go as far as to make a commitment at the end of the clawback period for the tax equity investors that we refinance those investors out so that the cash flows that they were sweeping inure back to the benefit of the developer.
How did you get to where you are today? Tell me a bit about your background.
That is an interesting question. I just went through this yesterday with a young developer who's been very successful and in his mid-40s, and he asked me the same exact question. My response to him was, I got here by working hard, being honest, recognizing that this business, I had the benefit of not having financial constraints. I had the benefit of not requiring economic enrichment to myself. In fact, all of the work that I do really just funds my Spano Family Foundation to support the philanthropy that I do. So my motivation has never been profitability. Obviously, I incorporate profit in every project I do, and that's how I fund my philanthropy. But when you approach business with a collaborative, strategic partnership approach, which is what I do with all of my relationships, we both share in the upside. In any deal that I do, I always make sure that it's a win-win-win for all the parties. By doing that, over the years, my reputation has grown, and people on a regular basis now come to me when they have problems with a development or with a financing issue. And when they come to me, it opens up opportunities for me to partner with them and to provide them the missing piece that they need to get to the end game of their projects.
Can you talk about how you acquired the money to get to the point where you don't have to care about money?
Sure. I ran a financial planning firm for most of my career. So I didn't actually get into the solar industry till I was in my late 40s. Up until then, I had run a very successful high net worth financial planning firm, which provided me with a significant nest egg. I sold that after I started the real estate business. And then I basically used that capital, along with my brother had run a very successful import business. He had retired within a year of me. So the two of us got together, we put our capital together, invested in real estate development in 1986, and quickly lost most of our money.
But you still had enough to do what you're doing and not worry about money.
Yes. Once you accumulate a certain net worth, there's always the nest egg that can get you through the rest of your life. Now it's a matter of either accumulating for, you know, a lot of people accumulate just for to increase their estate, pass it on to their heirs. I personally have been accumulating wealth to support my philanthropy, which is where my heart's always been. And just kind of add to that, when you consider that using the development of projects that decarbonize and support the environment in order to support philanthropy, it's really a double win. And it's, for me, it's what excites me and what gets me up every morning.
That's awesome. You talked about your real estate losses. Can you talk about other challenges you've had in your career, especially as it relates to the solar business?
I'll give you one major solar challenge. In 2004, I started developing my first solar projects. By 2006, we had invested tens of millions into solar projects. By 2010, I had about 70 megawatt worth of grid-connected projects under development. By 2012, most of those were in New Jersey. So in 2012, when S-1925, which was the Solar Act in New Jersey, was passed and prevented us from building on greenfields, that was a pretty significant challenge, being that I had millions of dollars invested in greenfield development.
Wow.
In fact, that's really the catalyst that pushed me 100% into renewables. Having that kind of a stranded asset required a lot of work in order to get yourself out of a hole like that. And what I did is I had gotten together all of the major developers. I think they represented 84% of all the grid scale developments in New Jersey. I got them all together in my office under the auspices of, look, we're all developing these projects. We're all getting crushed. We're all not represented by anybody. The residential guys, they're all represented by major players in the industry. The C&I guys are all represented by major guys in the industry and major companies. But the utility grid scale is not represented by anybody. We're all on our own, and we all think we're big shots. But individually, there's none of us that are big enough to fight the BPU in the state of New Jersey. However, if we combine our efforts, then we're a pretty big voice within the state. And interestingly, I was able to get 22 developers of utility-scale solar projects to join the New Jersey Solar Grid Supply Association, to pony up. At that time, I think we raised about $400,000, hired a law firm in South Jersey, and basically filed a $500 million lawsuit against the New Jersey BPU and the state of New Jersey, which over the course of a year got settled and successfully settled, and we all got our projects built.
On your greenfields that you thought were gone?
On my greenfields. We did scale back, like projects that were 12 megawatt. We had to cut back to 10 to meet the Section Q. But for the most part, we had a super win on that. And that kind of also pushed me into the solar industry on a full-time basis.
So I was going to ask about big successes, but it sounds like that was a really big success. Can you talk about other successes that you've had?
One of the other developments I was doing at the time was a second phase of an industrial park in Manalapan, New Jersey, actually Millstone Township, New Jersey. We had a similar situation. I was unable to sell a single lot. My first phase sold out. Second phase, couldn't sell a single lot. Again, under the stress, when I saw how successful I was in saving that mall project, and I'll speak to that in a moment, but when I saw how successful I was in that, I was able to recognize that I can do this in this other project. So I ended up building a 12 megawatt project on there, literally made more money than I would have made had I continued with my second phase of the industrial park. And that lesson reinforced the earlier lesson, and I went from property to property across the state, giving up. New Jersey in 2012 issued a law that you can exchange your other approvals for solar approvals, and it was up to the town or the municipality. The burden was on them to prove how it would be a detriment to the town. So it enabled me to go out and repurpose a whole bunch of my other properties, and that's where we ended up at like 67 megawatt worth of grid-connected projects that were developed.
So you basically changed projects from developing real estate on them and buildings to rent out and changed them into utility-scale solar.
That's right. So instead of carbon contributors, we turned them into carbon detractors. And I want to make a point. I mentioned that mall, which got me into the solar industry. Curiously, I ended up carving 13 acres out, and I took a little 3/4 megawatt system that I was backfeeding into the mall to market as an all-green mall. I increased that to a 3.6 megawatt, carved out 13 acres, and sold the development rights to the local utility, kept the ground lease, and that's what enabled me to keep the property. The ground lease serviced the debt on the project, because obviously we had $9.5 million or $10.5 million worth of debt. I had a $26 million appraisal, and after I lost all my approvals, it was a $6 million appraisal with a $10.5 million debt. So the way that I saved that is and turned it into a performing loan is I increased the size of the solar. So today, and again, that's what began that whole series of solar developments. But today, that property, there was 138 acres. I carved the 13 out. I have 125 acres left that I just recently sold 280 building lots to Kay Avnanian for $28 million. And I sold, I have offers to purchase. I have 175,000 square feet of retail, and I have offers to purchase that at a significant number. So not only did solar enable me to retain the property and not be in default on a note, and open the door for all the other development that we've done, it also enabled me to save the property. I would have lost that property completely. It enabled me to save the property, and today I was able to make a substantial profit off of it.
So how many megawatts of solar have you done already, and what's your goal?
Just over 300 megawatt. That's a combination of developing, co-developing, and financing. Our goal at Radiant REIT is to have $10 billion of capital deployed within 3 years and $1.5 billion in the first year, and we have every expectation of achieving that goal.
$10 billion of solar.
Correct.
That's pretty exciting.
Actually, it's $10 billion of debt.
Yes.
Which means it's even a higher amount of actual solar installation.
That's pretty exciting.
Yes, we're excited. We've been out in the marketplace spreading the word, and we've had tremendous success so far.
Can you talk about your vision for the future? Where do you see the world in 20, 30, 40 years?
That's an interesting question. Now we're talking about the world. The reality is that climate change is not a regional, it's not a local, it's an international, it's a world concern, it's a global concern. My big concern is if we struggle in economically fruitful countries, and we struggle to get the penetration and decarbonization, how can we expect third world countries and where people are more concerned about feeding their children than worrying about their grandchildren's atmosphere? So I think from a world basis, it's really going to take a lot more than the individual states and individual countries. We put together the different world groups like they do in France and REMI and things. But I think we need to think even bigger. We have a United Nations. We really need a United Nations to address climate change. We need an entity that's a world-supported entity where the wealthier countries are going to subsidize the less wealthy countries in order to stabilize the environment on a global basis.
There's such a good opportunity for us to leverage technology to do good, but at the same time, we're at risk right now. The way you were talking, it made me think this really is an inflection point where either we come together as a world and fight this as a world and care about all the people that live on this earth, or we go down.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If you go back 30, 40 years ago when I was younger and they were first, looking at the space flights and colonizing Mars and all these ideas that were crazy at the time. Is it crazy today? Probably still crazy today. Do we have enough time to repopulate another planet? Definitely not. We really don't have a choice. We need to address climate change. We need to address it on a global basis, and we need leadership. And that's really what it's going to take. Unfortunately, here in the United States, we have a void in that leadership. We have an administration that's not fully supportive of climate change and hasn't accepted the reality. I think we're turning the corner, but I think that we had opportunities for the last 10, 12 years to have made a significant impact, and we passed on the opportunity. I don't think we can afford to pass on it any longer.
Do you see us turning that corner soon?
I think we've already started to turn the corner. I think you're seeing, just looking around the United States alone at how many states have gone to high RPSs, looking around the world, looking at the proliferation of storage. I mean, that's on a global basis. That's the future. So I think we have a solution out there. And I think that we're finally putting, there are so many companies that are setting up these incubation technology companies now and supporting them. A lot of your Googles and Amazons, they're actually building their own incubation centers. And I think that now that there's funding going into these technology startups, which is really what was needed, we have a tremendous amount of brain power in the United States, and we don't use it. And we don't use it because of capital constraints. The same thing that I'm trying to solve in the solar industry has been a problem for the entire tech industry. And I think we need, as a country, particularly with respect to climate change, to start really focusing and deploying dollars into technologies that will improve the climate. I have one big issue. Right now in New Jersey, there's a major rift between environmentalists and the solar industry and regulators. And that rift really is based on cost. Practically speaking, there's only so many dollars, and you can only do so much with so many dollars. But I think we're beyond the point of saying practically speaking. We're now at the point of saying that this isn't a choice. This is something we need to do. And if as a state and as a country and as a world, we're not committed to funding the cost of addressing climate change, the overall cost will be so significantly greater. And the longer that we delay this, the greater those costs become. So I think our regulators and our leadership needs to recognize that just like if you want to have a transportation system, you have to put roads across the country. If you want to have a carbonless electric grid, you have to change the structure of the grid. You have to change the form of generation and distribution. And that's where the solar plus storage is a tremendous technology that can really, really, really change, make the most significant change with respect to electricity generation. And it's even more important now that we're seeing EVs become the mainstream. So we're reducing the carbon from all their gasoline, but if we're pumping carbon into the atmosphere to generate the electricity, have we really done what we're intending to do? So I think it's even more imperative at this point to reallocate those dollars. Does it hurt? Sure, it's going to hurt. None of us like to pay taxes, but we do. This is a tax that needs to be paid in order for the human race to survive.
So you mentioned storage a few times now. Do you do solar plus storage or just solar?
No, I have a company that does solar plus storage as well.
When you were talking about turning a corner, I think we have yet to turn the corner because I've seen what turning the corner looks like, at least in videos, not in something I've been around to see. But I was in New Orleans and I saw the information about World War II and how we decided we were going to get in. And everything in the country changed. Everything was focused on that.
Right.
The rules were all broken because that was too important to just follow the rules. And right now, I think with regards to climate change, we're trying to use the old rules. We're not breaking rules yet. We're trying to let the utilities do what they do, and the public utility commissions do what they do, and governments do what they do. And I think until we break the rules, we're not going to get there.
I couldn't agree with you more. That was the point that I was trying to make, is that, you know, we have all these rules and budgets and cost structures. This is a time where we have to break those rules. We have to break those budgets. We have to break the bank. We have to do whatever it takes to survive. As you indicated, when World War II came, we repurposed all of our factories. Why aren't we repurposing our factories today?
Not only that, people that were leading major companies at the time gave up those jobs to lead the effort to change what things we knew how to manufacture. I'm not saying I want to manufacture weapons. I want to manufacture clean energy products. But they changed what they did for a living and where they put their money. And they worked without money in many cases in order to advance those efforts.
That's right. And I think I agree we've not changed the corner past tense. I do believe that we've approached the corner and that we are looking around it and that we're taking baby steps. And that's my problem is we're taking baby steps again because of the cost. But I think we do, we've looked around, we've seen what the future is. We recognize now, and I think it's fairly common that we recognize we have a problem. Now it's a matter of, do we have the time to work on solutions or do we get our butts in gear and just implement solutions?
Yeah, now that you have me thinking about World War II again, I have this scary thought. And what got us into World War II was not figuring out that the world as we knew it was going to change if we didn't get involved, but we got hit in Pearl Harbor. So we needed some huge event to really move everybody in the same direction.
Okay, we've seen Katrina and we've seen Sandy. I think we've seen the first stages of what's to come, and I think people are scared. And I think that fear is starting to motivate people. So, and I think you are seeing people that are leaving industry and focusing. You yourself have done it. So I think we're just starting to turn the corner, and we need to now push people around that corner. We can no longer just peek.
Is there anything else you want to add?
I think I'd like to talk a little about philanthropy.
That'd be great.
Earlier I spoke about third world countries and the lack of economic ability to address climate change. I want to talk about a project that I worked on back in 2010. There was a company called MX Solar that was an Italian company that was manufacturing panels in New Jersey. At the time, we just had the major earthquake in Haiti, where it was the most disastrous thing that you can imagine. Immediately after that earthquake, I was doing some work with MX. And we got together and we jointly worked on a charitable contribution of almost $500,000 of solar equipment that was sent down to Haiti. And me and a group installed the solar along with a battery storage system and provided a nonprofit hospital that operated with 2 hours of power a day. They were the very southern tip of Haiti at the very end of the distribution line of the worst grid in the world. So they literally would only have power 2 hours a day. We came in there, and you can imagine if you need a surgery and you're waiting for power to come on to have your procedure done in an emergency.
Yeah, a little bit different than Medicare for All is give me some electricity so I could even if I have money, I can get something done.
Exactly. So what we did is we installed that system, and they now have 24/7 power, not only in that hospital, but also in a maternity clinic that we installed solar on. I went down there last year with Senator Parker and a group of volunteers, some pastors. I shipped down, in this time, about $100,000 worth of solar equipment that we were installing on a remote village that had no electricity. So we're basically going to put a small solar system in the middle of the village where people would literally power charge their batteries and to take the batteries into their huts and have power in the evenings. And the problem, again, is in these third world countries, it's not just the economics. The reason that they're in economic distress is because they have corrupt governments. They have policies that create classes. So here's a situation where we send this equipment down there. We send a dozen guys down there, and they wouldn't release it from customs.
Wow.
Ultimately, they kept it. So what happens is instead of the orphanage and the villages getting the power, you know, these big expensive homes are going to have solar. And that's really where I think what I said earlier, we need a world organization that has the power to go into these smaller countries without the threat of imperialism or invasion, but to come into these countries and say, hey, you can't continue to pollute like this. We're not going to allow that factory to continue to operate under those conditions, that we'll provide you the resources necessary to clean that plant up, because we know that they're not going to be able to afford to do it on their own. They're barely surviving. On a positive note, we are making a significant impact on climate. Radian Reed itself has over $250 million of applications already in within the first couple of weeks of taking applications. We expect to have over $1.5 billion committed within the next 10 months. And I think we're going to make a significant change. And I'd like the audience to recognize that there's a tremendous opportunity to further the penetration of solar by all of us getting involved and all of us taking equity positions into the market. If we allow the larger companies to continue to aggregate, we're never going to get to a distributed energy resource system. We're always going to have centralized generation. The only way we're going to get to distributed generation is to have smaller developers owning assets that they can deploy locally. It's great that Amazon and Google can hire big companies and build wonderful systems that decarbonize, but it's all the small companies across the United States that don't have access and don't have the outreach that a Google or an Amazon or a Walmart has. We need to empower those smaller businesses, and the way to do that is by empowering the developers, enabling them to build systems within their communities, own and operate them for their communities, and have distributed generation more prolific as opposed to in pockets where big companies exist.
I agree with you, but I also like the big pockets where companies exist. It brings the price down, it makes the technology more robust, and we're all in this together. So the big, the small, everywhere you look, I want to see solar.
I agree 100%. I was speaking from Radiant REIT's perspective.
I understand.
That we're not necessarily going to be loaning to Google.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to wrap this up, and I'm going to wrap this up with a wrap. Well, Jim was one of the first for sure. He started his solar journey in 2004 into green fields. He did delve, but a law went against him in 2012. He wasn't trying his horn to toot, but he ended up winning the green field suit. His reason for getting involved, there were many factors, but now he's made things carbon subtractors. You can tell talking to him that he really cares. He doesn't want weather events that are supposed to be once every 500 years. He is involved in originating a loan because he wants the developers to own. That's all I got.
That's pretty damn good. Off the cuff like that, holy shit.
Jim shared numerous examples of adversity leading him in new risky directions, but the result was more financial success and a focus on helping others. From failing real estate deals to successful solar projects, and now to launching a $10 billion solar fund. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crevatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And if you're in San Diego and want to trade your concern about climate change for a few hours of some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. Contact me to confirm specific show dates. And if you want to release from some of life's stress or to improve your speaking skills, consider taking a class at an improv workshop in your town. In 2010, Jim worked with MX Solar to bring almost $500,000 of solar and storage equipment to Haiti after the disastrous earthquake there. Leveraging the clean energy, they powered a nonprofit hospital that previously suffered from an extremely unreliable energy grid that only provided electricity 2 hours per day, to instead provide around-the-clock medical services and a maternity clinic, saving lives and improving mortality locally and globally, mitigating climate change.